It is misleading to speak of lower and higher chakras. It is like comparing the foundation of the building to the roof. The roof is not superior. The foundation is not inferior. The quality, lifespan, stability, and security of a building depends to a large extent more on the foundation than upon the roof. For example, in the physical body, your energies need to be in Mooladhara Chakra to some extent. Moola means root or source, and Adhara means foundation. In the engineering of the body, this is the base. If you wish to grow, you need to cultivate this. At the same time, chakras have a spiritual dimension, not just a physical one. If you bring the right amount of awareness to it, the same Mooladhara can be transformed to a point where you become absolutely free of the compulsive need for food and sleep. The chakras fall into one of the two different dimensions, the Mooladhara, Swadhisthana, Manipuraka, and related chakras are more concerned with keeping the body stable and rooted. These are qualities associated with earth, with self-preservation. When your energies are dominant in these chakras, your qualities are earthy and you are more in the grip of nature. The upper chakras, the Vishuddhi, Agna, Sahasrara, and related chakras are centers that draw you away from the pull of the earth. They are concerned with the longing for the infinite. They make you receptive to a force that we customarily refer to as grace. The middle chakra, Anahata, is a balance between the two. It is like a transition between your lower and upper chakras, between the survival instincts and the instinct toward liberation. It is symbolized by two interlocking triangles, one pointing downward and another upward, forming a six-pointed star. Many religious traditions have used the star as a sacred symbol because some enlightened beings in these cultures realized their original nature through Anahata and discovered the interlocking triangles of this chakra within themselves. The Vishuddhi chakra, located at the pit of your throat, literally means filter. If your Vishuddhi becomes powerful, you have the ability to filter everything that enters you. Or in other words, once your Vishuddhi is very active, you grow so powerful that the external nature has no influence over you. Indian iconography depicts Adiyogi, or Shiva, with a blue throat, because he is capable of filtering all the poisons of the outside world and preventing them from entering his system by stalling them in his throat. If your energies move into Agna Chakra, located between your eyebrows, you are intellectually enlightened, but still not experientially liberated. The great mystic philosopher of 8th century India, Adi Shankara, walked all across the land, defeating legions of scholars in metaphysical debate. His logic was unbeatable, because the union experienced in Agna endows one with an extraordinary level of intellectual insight and perception. The seventh chakra, Sahasrara, is actually located just outside the body. For most people, it is dormant. Through spiritual practice or a very intense way of living, you can activate this. If you hit your Sahasrara, your experience is no longer intellectual. It is experiential. You now explode into unexplained ecstasies, and the deepest mystical realms start opening up. Sometimes you can attain ecstasies that can turn uncontrollable if there is not sufficient spiritual practice to create necessary physiological and psychological balance. In the yogic tradition, these ecstatic mystics were termed avadhutas. They were in such altered states of consciousness that they often had to be fed and taken care of by those around them because they were incapable of handling the worldly aspects of life on their own. Fundamentally, any spiritual path can be described as the journey from the Mooladhara to the Sahasrara, an evolution from one dimension to another. There is a wide spectrum of spiritual practices in the yogic system that enables one to move one's energies from one chakra to another. However, from the Ajna to the Sahasrara, there is no path. You must either leap or fall into it. This is one of the reasons for tremendous emphasis on a living guru in the yogic tradition. To make the leap from Ajna to the Sahasrara takes immense trust. Suppose you are confronted by a bottomless abyss and someone asked you to plunge into it. You would either have to be utterly crazy, extraordinarily courageous, or absolutely trusting to do it. Almost no one has the kind of courage it takes. Very few are mad enough to live their lives with total abandon. Most people live with caution and the overriding need to protect their boundaries. So for a 99.9% of the people, what is needed is trust. Without trust, they will never make the leap. However, the abyss need not conjure dark images of a terrifying pit. Instead, it signifies a space free of all possibility of hurt and suffering, an entirely new dimension that is flawlessly non-repetitive, a dimension beyond comparison, and context that leaves you not as an individual, but as all-encompassing, infinite nature, in a stillness beyond bliss. And so, the leap is worth it. The leap is everything. With the leap, the bottomless abyss becomes boundless freedom. Sadhana. By focusing at a point 6 to 9 inches away from the region between your eyebrows for 12 to 48 minutes, with your eyes open, you can realize the nature and structure of your individual chakras, depending on the duration and level of your focus. This perception can help in stabilizing the random movement of chakras in the human physiology due to stressful external situations. This is just one aspect of a very sophisticated form of Kriya Yoga that allows you access to your inner akashic or etheric dimension. Uncharted path. The sixth limb of yoga is referred to as dhyana or dhyan, which is essentially about transcending the boundaries of one's physical and mental framework. Dhyan traveled from India to China along with the Buddhist monks, where it was referred to as chan. This yoga traveled through Southeast Asian countries to Japan and became Zen, and found expression as a whole system of direct insight without an emphasis on doctrine. Zen is a spiritual path that has no scriptures, books, rules, or rigid practices. It is an uncharted path. The first recorded use of the method we now call Zen happened almost 8,000 years ago, well before the time of Gautama the Buddha. King Janaka was a brilliant man, an ardent seeker, burning with the longing to know. He had exhausted all spiritual teachers in the kingdom. None of them could help him because they were all born out of the book. He had still to meet someone who came from inner experience. One day the king went on a hunting trip, Riding deep into the jungle, he caught sight of a yogi. He stopped. Seated outside a small hermitage was Ashtavakra, one of the most accomplished yogis and spiritual masters of all time. Janaka prepared to get off the horse to greet him. He swung his leg over the saddle and was about to dismount when Ashtavakra said, "Stop." So Janaka stopped right there, one leg still in the stirrup and the other mid-air. It was a painful position to be in, but Janaka stayed frozen, staring at Ashtavakra. We don't know how long the guru held him that way, but suddenly, in that awkward state, Janaka became fully enlightened. The method employed by Ashtavakra was akin to what is generally known in the world as Zen today. Once it happened, there was a Zen master whom everyone respected, but who had no teaching to impart. He always carried a huge sack on his shoulders. This would contain many items, and some of it would be sweets. In every town and village that he visited, children would gather around him and he would distribute sweets and leave. People asked for teachings, but he would just laugh and go on his way. One day, a man who was himself known to be a Zen master of great repute came to meet him. He wanted to ascertain whether this man with a sack was really Zen or not. So he asked him, "What is Zen?" Immediately, the man dropped the sack and stood straight. Then he asked, "What is the goal of Zen?" The man picked up the sack, slung it over his shoulders and walked away. This is yoga too. This is what every spiritual practice is about. When you want to attain yoga or Zen, you have to drop your load, discard everything on the way, remain free, stand upright. It is important. With your load, you may never do it. And what is the goal of yoga? Consciously take on the whole load once again. Now, it no longer feels like a load.